Conversation with All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin, at home, like you. But our goal here each night, wherever we happen to be, remains to answer your questions.
Hello, this is Robert in San Francisco.
Hello, this is Sultram.
This is Anna Skemper from Fairbanks, Alaska.
This is Laura.
I'm an independent contractor in Silicon Valley.
A lot of small businesses are struggling.
My revenue is disappearing.
Here's my question.
My question is,
I have three questions for you tonight.
Could this be a case of COVID-19?
Are there preventive measures that can be taken at home?
What does that mean for co-parenting families?
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for your response.
Each night we'll have NPR journalists and outside experts here to offer solid facts, whatever we know, and to correct some of the misinformation that's floating around. And when we don't know something, we'll tell you that too. Send us your questions about all these topics and more at npr.org/nationalconversation. On Twitter, you can use the hashtag NPRConversation. But each night we begin the national conversation by asking the question, what happened today? Dr. Deborah Birx of the Coronavirus Task Force says, death toll projections are dropping because Americans are following the social distancing guidelines.
And that's what's changing the rate of new cases, and that's what will change the mortality going forward.
Initial data from the CDC showed African Americans were disproportionately affected by the virus. 33% of patients who needed to be hospitalized were African American, but African Americans make up 13% of the U.S. population. The World Health Organization is defending their response to the virus after criticism from President Trump. WHO Director Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus warned against politicizing the virus.
If you don't want many more body bags, then you refrain from politicizing it.
In the U.S., there have been more than 14,000 deaths. New York and New Jersey hit new peaks in their death tolls. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo says hospitalizations, though, are going down.
Individual hospitals, the larger systems, are reporting that some of them are actually releasing more people than are coming in.
The Coronavirus Task Force warned Philadelphia and Washington, D.C. could be the next hotspots. Speaker Nancy Pelosi tells NPR a new bill is in the works to help small businesses and states.
The states and the localities are bearing a tremendous, tremendous burden in all of this.
Around the world, there are 1.5 million confirmed infections and more than 88,000 deaths. NPR's White House reporter Ayesha Roscoe is here to explain what we heard tonight during the White House briefing. Hello, Ayesha, from wherever you are.
Hello, I'm at home.
Well, a hearty wave to you at home from my home. At the briefing today, the vice president and health officials said they were encouraged that the virus may be leveling off. What's giving them that confidence?
In cities and states with the biggest outbreaks, there are early signs that the number of new cases is stabilizing and not dramatically rising the way they were. This means that the number of total deaths is looking like it will be lower than some of those early, really horrific projections from models. But the situation is still very serious, and the experts on the task force emphasize that people still need to follow the guidelines, avoid gatherings, stay home when possible, wash hands, and that it's especially serious for people with underlying medical conditions, and that includes many people in the African-American community as a result of historic long-term discrimination. So Black Americans have been hit really hard by the virus, and there are still trouble spots. The task force said tonight that Philadelphia is emerging as a new hotspot.
And, you know, of course, we got a lot of questions from listeners about when things will return to normal. Here is Patrick in Fort Collins, Colorado.
I want to know, what factors are public health officials considering when looking at how to mitigate this virus in the future? And I also want to know, how long is this going to be a legitimate health threat?
I'm sure that everybody wants to know that. Ayesha, what are you hearing?
What the experts are saying is that this will be a concern until there's a vaccine, and that won't happen for a year, year and a half at the earliest. So they want to be able to contain this outbreak and then be ready for next season in the fall and winter. Right now, experts are meeting to figure out what steps need to happen in terms of a national testing program and guidance so that people can eventually go back to work and schools can reopen. And if and when it comes back in the fall, Dr. Dr. Fauci has said the health system will be in a better place and better equipped to test, isolate, and contain flare-ups before they turn into these massive outbreaks. But there are a lot of things that still need to be figured out before things can go back to normal. And even when we kind of go back to work and things like that, things will be different because it's not going to just disappear.
That is NPR White House reporter Ayesha Roscoe. Ayesha, thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to turn now to NPR science correspondent John Hamilton. Welcome to you, John.
Hi.
And at that White House briefing, we got a sampling of new guidelines for critical workers who may have been exposed to the virus so they can go back to work. What did we learn?
So these guidelines come from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and they're really for workers who are considered to be part of what the CD calls this the nation's critical infrastructure. So what that means is, you know, law enforcement, people who answer 911 calls, workers in the food supply chain. Until now, if one of these workers came within 6 feet of someone that was thought to be infected, they had to stay home for 14 days. The new guidelines say they can keep going to work if they take some precautions. So they need to have their temperature taken before work, they need to wear a face mask, and they need to keep some distance from other workers. And of course, if they get sick, they can't come in.
So of course, everybody wants to... We've heard so much about social distancing. Some people prefer physical distancing. And we've gotten so many questions about that, as you might imagine. So let's hear some of them. I mean, this one is from Dan in Seattle, who has a question about the technical distinctions here.
We're seeing a lot of advice to quarantine, to shelter in place, to stay at home. But there are so many exceptions to the requirements, like you can travel, but how far? There's just so many loose ends to these concepts, and I was wondering if somebody could lay things out as specifically as possible and explain the rationale behind these things.
Okay, so shelter in place, quarantine, stay at home. John, help us out.
I'm feeling Dan's pain here because, you know, shelter in place is kind of an unfortunate term. I grew up in California where people used it to talk about what you do when an earthquake hits. It's also been used for, you know, active shooters, tornadoes. The problem is those events have some kind of endpoint. You know, you shelter in place and then you're told it's safe to come out and it's over. Coronavirus, it could go on a long time. And most people can't just lock themselves in their homes until this thing is over. You might need to go out and get food or medicine. Also, you know, going out is not necessarily dangerous with coronavirus. Exercising outside can be safe if you're not going near other people and things like that. So you have all these exceptions, which is what Dan is talking about. And I think we all need to figure out what we can do to minimize our own risk and the risk to other people while still living our lives, rather than trying to come up with very, set definitions of things like shelter in place. You know, for me, what this means is keep trips outside the home to a minimum, keep your distance from other people, but it doesn't mean you never leave your home.
Okay. Another question about social distancing from Brett in San Francisco.
I'm an avid gardener, and I've noticed that a lot of people, when they're outside, they stop and they talk in the parks and the sidewalks, and they maintain a prudent 6 feet. And it occurred to me that people could do the same sort of thing while gardening, and you might spend an hour or two with your friends in conversation, but still maintain a safe distance. And I'm wondering if that sounds safe to medical professionals.
What about it, John? Can the man garden with his friends?
Well, needless to say, I am not a medical professional, and I try not to play one on the radio. But my understanding, having read all the guidelines, is that people can engage in outdoor activities like this if they maintain a safe distance. So, you know, just the same way you might talk to your neighbor over a fence or go for a run with a friend who stays 6 feet away, it seems like the social distancing would allow for a conversation while, you know, planting vegetables. I guess the advice would be, you know, make sure you keep a few furrows between you and your gardening friends.
And share the produce, of course, right?
And share the produce,
absolutely, especially with your friends at NPR. So we actually got a couple of questions about sharing custody of children. This is not a laughing matter. So let's go to Jessica Main of Denver on this question.
My question is about the incubation period in light of sharing custody of a child. So let's say that parent A is exposed perhaps on day one, like at a crowded grocery store. Do you still count 14 days from the day one of likely exposure or from the day symptoms begin? When is it safe for me to get my child back? I have asthma and I'm at high risk.
And John, before you answer, I want to say that later in the program, we're going to speak to a lawyer about navigating shared custody right now. But first, what about Jessica's question? When is it okay to see your kid after a parent they're sharing custody with has been exposed?
Well, the mathematics part of this problem is pretty easy. The incubation period for coronavirus is usually about 5 days, almost never as long as 14 days. So if it's been 14 days since parent A went to the grocery store, and if parent A and the child don't have symptoms, the statistics say you're pretty safe. If anyone in the other household does have symptoms, then of course they should be tested. And obviously, if anyone tests positive, that time period is going to be much, much longer. And I'm glad you're talking to somebody later, because it's worth noting that, you know, coronavirus is causing all kinds of disruption to joint custody arrangements. Often the concern is the child's safety, but for somebody like Jessica, who has asthma, which means that getting the coronavirus could be really bad, it means that she needs to avoid the virus.
That is NPR's John Hamilton. John, thank you.
You're welcome.
You can hear much more of our extensive coverage when you download the NPR One app. Go to the Explore tab and click on the coronavirus outbreak for a curated stream of stories. If you have questions, we'd like to help. Go to npr.org/national conversation. On social media, use the hashtag NPR Conversation. Up next, what to do if you think you have coronavirus, but don't need to go to the hospital. We'll talk about how to manage at home.